I'm going to call this meeting of the Commerce Committee to order. Welcome, members, staff, and the public to our first meeting of the Commerce Committee in the biennium. A couple of housekeeping items to begin with. As been our longstanding practice in the committee, we will not be adopting committee rules this session, so you will not be getting a flood of committee rule emails throughout the legislature this week. You will not be receiving one about the Commerce Committee. We're just going to treat each other well. I do reserve the right to change my mind about rules at some future date should it become necessary. Otherwise, I'm trying to anticipate all of the questions that Representative O'Driscoll is going to ask me off the bat here. I doubt it, but I'm going to try. We have the same jurisdiction we've had in prior years. We have the same accounts we had in the prior years. We have the same desire to work cooperatively that we've had in past years.
I noticed the order wasn't the way we should have to think.
There you go. So that's my opening housekeeping. The next thing I think we will do is do some quick introductions. First of our members, and we will ask members to identify themselves, the communities they represent. If you are a first-term member, it is very helpful to say who, which I know this redistricting makes it tricky, but like which members generally represent the area that you represent now in the past. And then for fun, the practice we've had in this committee is just tell us, if we go to your district, what restaurant do we absolutely have to go to? And I will go first to give everyone time to think it over. I'm Zach Stevenson. I represent Anoka and Coon Rapids here in the legislature. And just on Saturday, I went to the best barbecue place in the state of Minnesota. And yes, I will fight anybody about this. Jelly Bean and Julia. And, lovely Anoka. And with that, I'll turn to Vice Chair Katiza Watoon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Carly Katiza Watoon. I represent District 49B, which is most of the city of Eden Prairie. I'm a third-term member, and just this past fall, Eden Prairie opened a new Asia Mall. So there's a variety of restaurants. It's right by Costco, so if you come to town, it's right off of 494. Easy jaunt from where we are now, and I would love to see you in town.
Why don't we continue on around the way here, Representative Farr?
Brian Farr, I represent House District 22B, so Le Sueur County, a piece of Rice, some of Scott, and some of Blewitt County. And the best place to eat is in Le Sueur, the Bar and Grill, which is right next to the best bank in the district.
So. No conflict of interest there, I'm sure. Representative New Brindley.
Thank you. Representative Ann New Brindley, I represent most of Chisago County. There is not just one best restaurant. I mean, if you're in Taylor's Falls for the day, you might want to go to the drive-in, get some homemade root beer. But if you're just driving through the Swedish Inn, everything is homemade. If you get a hamburger, it's a homemade bun. Or if you're in North Branch, Merchants Cafe, it's in the old bank building. It's very cool. There's not just one best.
This committee is about making the difficult choices, Representative Brindley. Representative Dowd.
I'm a very good representative for my district.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Kurt Dowd, I represent the communities of St. Francis, Zimmerman, and Princeton, and some rural townships around those communities. So I have not served on a committee in 10 years, so I would ask your grace if I don't do something properly, but did serve on the Commerce Committee when I was a freshman, and excited to roll up my sleeves in that. I would say the best restaurant in my district, hands down, is there's a pizza place in Princeton called the Pizza Barn. So if you ever go through Princeton, Pizza Barn, and it literally, I'd put it up against any pizza in the state. So it's phenomenal.
Well, welcome back.
Thank you.
Representative Dotseth.
Thank you. Representative Jeff Dotseth, House Seat 11A, which consists of all of Carlton County, Northern Pines, Southern St. Louis, formerly Mike Sandin's seat. Truly an honor to be here. They're all the best restaurants in our district. If you're looking for Hispanic food, Pedro's is absolutely amazing. That's in Cloquet. You've got Doc's down in Sturgeon Lake. And all the way to, you got to stop at Gordy's if you're going up to greater Minnesota as well. Gordy's at Top Hat. Encourage you to do so. Thank you.
Wonderful. Representative Perryman.
Good afternoon. My name is Bernie Perryman. I am representative for House 14A, which is South St. Cloud, Waite Park, St. Augusta, and St. Joe. And reading off all those towns, it would be very difficult to pick one. I know everyone says that, but they also, if this is being recorded, I have so many restaurant owner friends and bar. So if I'm being recorded, you're all wonderful guys. And if I did really like to pick one out, it would be a New Orleans restaurant in St. Joe, pretty new. And then, of course, there is a great microbrewery across the street, which enhances that whole thing. So thank you for having me. I am a freshman.
Representative Perriman was on to my secret plan to develop attack ad footage in the opening period. Representative
O'Driscoll. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to compliment all of you. You're much taller in person than you are on Zoom, which is helpful. I'm glad that we are back live in the doing the people's business. District 13B, Sartell, Sauk Rapids, Holding Ford, St. Stephen, Brockway Township, Holding Township, St. Wendell Township, and part of Sauk Rapids Township. The bar restaurant that is the most favorite of mine in my district is the Great River Bowl Partners Pub in Sartell. And the reason for that is, and the chair will be very familiar with this, that was the genesis of growing our workforce bill last year in the service industry, about allowing 17-year-olds to be able to serve alcohol. And those who've been on the committee know that that bill, if not but for the Senate, would have been law.
That pesky Senate. Representative Niska.
Harry Niska, I represent just the area just north of the chair's district, the entire city of Ramsey and a good chunk of Andover. I have some thoughts about the chair's restaurant recommendations. Jelly Bean Julia's is definitely excellent. Cork and Anoka is also great. In my district, of course, all the restaurants are above average. Margie's Kitchen and Cocktails in Andover is really terrific. And if you're up in that area, that's definitely a place to check out.
My wife is a big fan of Margie's. This is a good place. We'll swing around the table here. Representative Cleavorn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Representative Jenny Cleavorn. I represent Plymouth and Medicine Lake. In the spirit of bipartisan appreciation, I will go with Representative New Brindley. There's more than one. I'd give a shout out to Fox and Pantry. It's a small, newer restaurant in Plymouth that you can have either a coffee and pastry, or they will do a private dinner for you up to, I think, 25 people. So it's an excellent place to go. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Cleavorn. Representative Bierman.
Representative Robert Bierman, Apple Valley. And as we all know, the chamber is watching. So, yes, there are so many good restaurants in Apple Valley. But I just did some research on one, Taste of Thai Eye. I went to Thailand, just got back. The food there at the Taste of Thai Eye is authentic. So stop in there. Thanks.
That sounds very good. Chair Freiberg.
Thank you, Chair Stevenson. Mike Freiberg. Representative in my sixth term, I represent all our parts of Crystal, Golden Valley, Plymouth, and Robbinsdale. I think I'll go with a restaurant I really like, but my kids would probably be upset if I didn't say, and it's consistent with Representative Bierman, but it's Nong's Thai Cuisine at Medicine Lake Road and Highway 169 in Golden Valley. So if you're looking for Thai food and you're not in the Southeast Metro, I recommend, and you're in the Northwest Metro, I'd recommend Nong's.
Wonderful. Let's cross the table quick. Chair Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Erin Cagle, I represent District 39A, which is Spring Lake Park, Fridley, Hilltop, Columbia Heights. In my fourth term, but most of my district is Connie Bernardi's old district. So I'm getting to know some of the new, I only had two precincts carryover. So most of the restaurants in my new district are new to me as well. But King's Thai, that's always a go-to in my area because now the Old Piper's not in my area anymore.
Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Larry Kraft, representing most of St. Louis Park, other than two precincts that I share with Representative Joachim. First term, and previously the seat was held by Ryan Winkler. And in terms of best restaurant, I'm going to go with a couple more bakeries, Yum and Honey and Rye.
Wonderful. Representative Tabke.
Thank you, Chair Stevenson. Brad Tadke, representing Shakopee, and I am going to go with a new. Well, first I got elected in 18, lost in 20. I'm just going to skip that and go to 22. And best new restaurant in Shakopee that we've got is called the Shakopee House, and they've got a tiki bar in the basement, and it's really tasty. So
that sounds like fun. Cheer Liebling.
Wow. Well, good afternoon, everybody. Tina Liebling. So District 24B, which is now part of Rochester and most of Rochester Township, which is new to me. A lot of that area was represented before by Nels Pearson, so it's shifted a lot. a lot of the restaurants aren't actually in my district so much anymore, but I'll just mention, I think we have a really good craft beer thing going on in Rochester. And so, yeah, I know the chair came down and helped to find out about that. So I will mention Little Thistle, Thesis Beer Project. And if you also want food, really good food with your beer, you can go to Forager. And I would also say that I have another thing in common with Representative Doubt, which is when I was a freshman was the last time I was on the Commerce Committee. But that was maybe a couple years before you.
I don't remember seeing that.
No, a couple years before you.
Oh. I am looking forward to figuring out what else a Chair Liebling and Representative Doubt have in common.
We actually do a lot.
Mr. Chair. Representative Driscoll.
Maybe we could have a certain representative, and she knows who I'm talking about, keep track of maybe the common occupations they
have.
Oh,
there we go. We did need a new task for Chair Gagel.
Who are
you
going to pick on this year?
You have to figure that out.
You'll figure that out, I'm sure.
We did just establish authoritatively that we do have a quorum, so I will make that note, although I don't anticipate taking any official action today. Before we get to our agenda, we do want to talk about the people who really make this place go, which is our wonderful staff, and do our staff introductions. And first we have and we're going to ask our staff to also say a great place to eat, even though it's not a district, but just in your local vicinity. And so first, our wonderful house researcher, Ms. Pompu. Ms. Pompu.
Hi, everyone. I'm Laurie Pompu from House Research. This is my ninth session staffing commerce, which is a pleasure. And I live in St. Paul, and I would recommend Mucci's. It's an Italian restaurant with homemade pasta, and it's kind of a secret. There's no sign. There's 10 tables. You got to know. So I'm telling you all.
Wow. She said that into the microphone.
Yes.
I didn't spell that.
From House Fiscal, we have Ms. Eng.
Hi, I'm Ashley Eng. I work for House Fiscal. This will be my second session, Staffing Commerce Committee. I was just in Ely over the weekend, so I went to the steakhouse there. It's very good.
It is very good. I agree with that. We're back in person this year, so we have pages. We have two, Chris and Steven, if they want to quickly step up and say hi.
Hi.
Chris?
Yeah.
Chris, okay. And Steven. Wonderful. Then we have our researchers, Ms. Peterson from the Republican side.
I'm Casey Peterson with Republican Research, and I highly recommend Tory Ramen here in St. Paul.
Wonderful. And Mr. Anderson, who's there? There we go.
From DFL. Hi, Eric Anderson, DFL Research. I live in Apple Valley, and so Taste of Thai I would concur with, but Simply Pho is my favorite restaurant of all time.
Mm. And then our wonderful committee legislative assistant, Mr. Dockendorf.
Hi, Jack Dockendorf. My second year with the Commerce Committee as well. I would recommend Habanero Tacos. They are very local to me. They have a food truck about 30 feet from my doorstep. So
that perfect. Sounds pretty good. And last but not least, our committee administrator, Mr. Brown.
Simon Brown. It's my fourth year on the Commerce Committee, shockingly, fifth at the legislature. I live in St. Paul, but my favorite restaurant is Spitz in northeast Minneapolis.
Nice. Well, and we had Representative Cha arrived here. If you could just quickly say for the other members, you know, what districts, what areas you represent and your favorite restaurant in your district.
All right. Representative Cha, representing 47B Woodbury. And my favorite restaurant is My Kitchen.
All right. With that, we will get to what I think we've made our commissioner and attorney general wait long enough, so we will move forward with the agenda, starting with an overview of the Department of Commerce. I want to welcome to the committee our wonderful Commissioner of Commerce, Grace Arnold, and turn it over to you, Commissioner Arnold.
All right.
And members, if you have questions, I'll ask that you wait to the end of Commissioner Arnold's presentation, but you can let Mr. Dockendorf know. And this throughout our biennium, if you want to speak, catch his eye. He keeps the list.
All right. Hi, everyone. Good afternoon, Chair Stevenson, members. I'm super excited to be here. I'm Grace Arnold. I'm the commissioner of the Department of Commerce, and I have here my Director of Government Affairs, who if you don't know, you will get to know soon. He's great. His name is John Kelly. I'm really excited to be here. I didn't get a ton of time in the basement conference room, but I'm super excited to be out of there because every time I went in, I had like an allergic reaction to it. So great work, Chair.
We can all thank Chris McCall, by the way. We all should thank Chris McCall for not putting us in the basement.
Yeah, for those members who have not been down there. Yeah. I don't recommend it unless you have to. So I'm going to walk through today and do a bit of an introduction to the Department of Commerce. I'm going to talk to you about what Commerce does and where you might see us at work. Our presentation has a few short video clips, so hopefully they'll work because I'd also like you to get to know who we are. We have a great staff, and I will take every opportunity to lift them up because they're fantastic. Commerce's mission has three parts. We protect and assist consumers. We oversee and regulate more than 40 industry areas to protect consumers and ensure that marketplaces are competitive and fair. And we're working to engage Minnesotans with an emphasis on engaging communities that have historically been excluded, such as BIPOC and low-income communities. Commerce is carrying out our mission through five strategic priorities, which are to protect the public interest, serve as a trusted resource, reduce economic barriers, build resilience in the face of a changing climate, and work to foster a strong, competitive, and fair marketplace across a variety of markets in Minnesota. So we like to say that we're with you every day, and at first I thought there was no way that that's true, but it's true. We are with you every day. If you're filling up gas, if you're purchasing a home, if you're taking steps to reduce your energy use or rebuilding after a disaster, there are services and oversight provided by the department that impact all of those things. So I said this is my favorite slide because it shows my team. They're fantastic, and you'll get to know them as you engage with the department on your work through the session. So Tim Jenke is my chief operating officer and deputy commissioner. We have two leadership positions within our Division of Energy Resources. Michelle Grancy is our deputy commissioner, and then we are in the process of hiring for an assistant commissioner over that division. Deputy Commissioner over Financial Institutions is Max Zappia. Julia Dreyer is over our insurance area. Peter Brickwitty is over Government and External Affairs. We are in the process of hiring for an Assistant Commissioner over our Enforcement Division. And then I have a Chief of Staff, Haley Colkind. All right. So this is a sort of not an org chart, but a depiction of what we do. Our largest divisions are the three that have deputies, our Financial Institutions, Insurance, and Energy Resources Division. I'll be explaining more about the commerce areas that are within those purviews. I will not do much about, except to tell you that exists, our Division of Energy Resources or the Petro Fund. Those areas are within the Energy Committee, so I won't spend time on them here today. So Commerce's consumer protection and business oversight reaches statewide. This is one example of the way that we're statewide. Almost every division has something similar. So this is a map of Minnesota state chartered banks. So you can see they are throughout the state, and we have examiners that interact with those banks, so are located throughout the state and do their work across the state. So licensing is one of the services that Commerce does that reach statewide and touch many areas. So insurance agents, real estate agents, property appraisers, debt collectors, and other businesses. This is my fun fact one. We license sports agents. There are not very many of them, but that is one of our areas that we are involved in. This list doesn't include the financial institutions licensees. We'll get to those in a second because those have a slightly different. There are more businesses in that bucket, in addition to individuals. So this is the fun part. I'm going to introduce you to Jacqueline Olson. She's our Director of Licensing and Unclaimed Property, and she's going to talk a little bit about what she does.
Hi there. My name is Jacqueline Olson, and I am the Senior Director of the Licensing and Unclaimed Property Divisions at the Minnesota Department of Commerce. Commerce's licensing division issues about 200,000 professional and business licenses each year. We are responsible for issuing licenses for 25 different individual and company license types within the insurance, real estate, and collections industries. In addition, we review and approve pre-license and continuing education courses for professionals in the insurance and real estate industries. In 2021, Minnesota became one of the first states to require a valuation bias course for appraisers in Minnesota. The new requirement was made in collaboration with stakeholders in response to allegations and reports of the undervaluation of homes based on race and economic status. The concern with this type of behavior in the industry is the effect it may have on the generational wealth gap between whites and people of color. The purpose of Minnesota's licensing laws is to ensure that there is a fair and competitive marketplace and that consumers of those industries are protected. As senior director of our unclaimed property division, you should also know that we returned around $50 million to consumers in the past year. You should check out our website and see if you have any unclaimed property.
All right, and I will second Jackie's recommendation. You can go to our website, you can type in your name, and you can see if you have maybe forgotten about a checking account that you had years ago, which happens, and then we can return the money to you. So as Jackie mentioned, our unclaimed property area works to return unclaimed money or other items if you're the legal owner or heir. We've returned $656 million to lawful owners over the life of the program and about $200 million over the past 2 years. All right, I'm going to move on to our financial institutions division. That division works to ensure the safety and solvency of banks, credit unions, money transmitters, and other financial institutions. That work includes 220 state-chartered banks with $59 billion in assets and $52 billion in deposits. We have 62 state-chartered credit unions that have $28 billion in assets. And one thing that I want to talk a little bit about is the work that we've done to foster racial equity through partnerships between the Commerce Department, the community, and the finance industry. I'm happy to talk more about those efforts, but I think we've done a nice job of having space to have conversations about places where there is inequality within the system and in many cases just a lack of trust within the system. And I think those have been really productive, and we've heard from both our industry and the community that they've been productive conversations. So within our securities and investments area at Commerce, we register and examine and regulate 448 investment firms who manage over $10 billion of Minnesotans' money. That's deposited in 49,000 accounts, and we oversee almost 10,000 investment advisors. I'm very grateful that in 2022, the legislature approved more securities staff. This is a big amount of money. And we saw a really dire need to bolster the licensing, examination, oversight for investment advisors who manage those $10 billion. So I'm really grateful that team is grateful, and that's really helped us to, improve that team's work. So the final area of our financial institutions division is our non-depository or non-bank work. These include money transmitters like PayPal, payday lenders, debt servicers, and mortgage servicers. One thing that's been a big change in the last several years within the mortgage industry in particular is that non-bank entities like Rocket Mortgage or Quick Loans have become the primary mortgage originators when Minnesotans are buying a home. One example of Commerce's policy work in the non-depository banking area was a new law passed in 2021 under Chair Stevenson's leadership. That's the Student Loan Borrower Bill of Rights. This law establishes what loan servicer companies can and cannot do in their interactions with borrowers. You can see, I won't go all through that, but if you want to chat about it, we're more than happy to. And I think that's been a really great additional consumer protection that we've added. So thanks, Chair. All right, I'm going to move on to the insurance division. So the insurance division regulates insurance carriers for auto, health, homeowners, as well as life and long-term care, and we review rates and enforcement for workers' compensation and insurance. There are a boatload of tinier markets that I could go into if you're interested, but those are the main ones. Our work involves examining, analyzing, and licensing carriers to ensure safety and claims paying ability. So if you get a policy, you know that the company has money in the bank to pay on that policy should you need it. We also monitor markets and make policy recommendations to maintain market health and stability. So I'm going to introduce Fred Anderson. He's a nationally recognized expert, Someone told me that he was worth his weight in gold once, and I'm grateful he's at the department. He's our chief life actuary in our insurance division. So Fred will talk about what he does.
Hi, I'm Fred Anderson. I'm the chief life actuary in the insurance division at the Department of Commerce. Our division has frequently been involved in efforts by the National Association of Insurance Commissioners, or NAIC, to lead and participate on many committees and task forces involved with insurance issues. We've been involved with developing NAIC model laws and bringing them to the Minnesota legislature. These efforts help ensure strong consumer protections are in place regarding insurers' financial strength and future claims paying ability. Sometimes Minnesota takes a lead in developing national efforts on insurance issues. Let me give one example. Commerce was able to get a law passed by the legislature in 2022 for innovative long-term care insurance products. These innovative products are intended to help meet the needs of middle-income Minnesotans. Getting the law passed involved a lot of work by Commerce to engage stakeholders and other state agencies. Commerce has worked to collaborate with stakeholders on innovations and with the NAIC are ways we leverage resources and expertise to benefit Minnesotans.
All right. So Fred mentioned that we do a lot of collaboration. We collaborate with other state agencies and stakeholders to identify new health policy options and solutions for consumers. You may have heard that there is it's an informal subcabinet of the healthcare agencies with which Governor Walz set up to help formalize our collaboration. And that has really helped to make sure that we are thinking about the whole of a person when they access healthcare. We're also committed to assisting consumers. Reinsurance is one of the efforts that, to help Minnesotans who buy individual health plans, and that was renewed last year by the legislature, so thank you all for that. That was a proposal that helped kept premiums that would otherwise have been much higher for Minnesotans buying their own coverage through the individual market, health insurance market, kept them lower. We also have oversight over pharmacy benefit managers and providers of last resort. All right, I'm gonna move on to our enforcement division. Our enforcement division works to create a fair marketplace and encourage responsible business conduct. We have four teams within that division: our customer service center, our civil investigations, criminal investigations, and market conduct. Let me introduce you to Krita King, who's one of our experts in our consumer support center, and she's gonna talk about what she does.
Hi, I'm Krita King. I've worked for 10 years at the Department of Commerce. I'm an investigator in the Enforcement Division's Consumer Service Center. We work to protect Minnesotans by conducting civil and criminal investigations of complaints from consumers and businesses about possible fraudulent activities by insurance or financial businesses regulated by Commerce. In 2022, we received over 42,000 calls into our consumer service center. Commerce recovered about $15 million that we returned to consumers and imposed almost $3 million in fines. Commerce's goal in our investigations is not only to protect consumers through our state laws, but also encourage a fair, equitable, and competitive marketplace where all businesses play by the same rules. You can file complaints with Commerce by phone, by email, and online through our website.
All right, and should you have a constituent that ever has an issue, we can make sure you have that information or you can contact our team. We often hear folks who are having challenges getting through their insurance, and that's what that consumer support center is there for. So our investigators like Krita help respond to thousands of consumer calls and complaints each year. Sometimes the resolution is something that is just working through something. Sometimes it does require investigation. And that's why we are there to serve both consumers and businesses, because a fair marketplace is helpful to everyone. When there is something that needs investigation that may involve a violation of statute, we have a civil enforcement team. That team can investigate everything from real estate to insurance and securities issues. We also have a criminal enforcement unit that's the Commerce Fraud Bureau. staff, not all, but many of the staff there are licensed law enforcement officers. And in addition to investigations of insurance fraud, the Fraud Bureau's staff and legislative authority was expanded in 2022 to include a broader definition of financial-related crimes. So our investigators support local law enforcement with expertise in highly complex insurance and financial crimes. The final area that we have in the enforcement division is market conduct. That's primarily to investigate sort of market-wide conduct in the insurance industry. Senior financial fraud is one area where Commerce has been taking an increased area of responsibility. In 2018, the Safe Senior Financial Protection Act allowed financial professionals to report senior fraud crimes. And in 2020, the legislature expanded that act to allow for temporary holds on suspected fraud from seniors or vulnerable adults. So some examples of senior fraud that are common, the vast majority involves exploitation by trusted family members or friends. That makes these investigations super challenging and really delicate. And our team then, you know, does that work really, really well, but it is quite a challenge. Seniors are increasingly targeted by scammers, such as phone scams. Someone calls and impersonates a grandchild, or romance scams on social media with someone conning an elderly person to send them money. They're stranded on an oil rig in North Dakota, and they need to get out, but they've fallen in love is sort of one of the examples we've heard. And an email or postal scam, such as claiming the scam target has won the lottery. So the next area that I'll talk about that is housed within our Division of Energy Resources is our telecommunications unit. That unit conducts investigations on landline telephone service issues in Minnesota, advocates on behalf of the public interest before the Public Utilities Commission, and enforces statutes and rules. Internet and cell phone service are not regulated by the state, except to receive FCC funds by broadband deployment and low-income assistance. So as a recent example, we filed a complaint urging the Public Utilities Commission to hold the state's largest landline provider accountable for a pattern of service failures. Next, I'll move on to our Weights and Measures unit. This unit is one of the important ways that Commerce engages with Minnesotans every day, and our services reach statewide. Weights and Measures is the oldest consumer protection in the state. It's been in place since 1885. Our inspectors test the accuracy of commercial products sold by weight and volume. So the most common place that you can see this, if you go to the gas station or the grocery store, gas stations have a little sticker that says Commerce Department. That means someone has checked that the gallon you're pumping is a gallon and is the right blend. And, you know, the types of complaints that we might hear are that there's water in the gas, and so we go and investigate. Grocery scales, similarly. So if you go to the meat counter, there'll be a little sticker on. We ensure consumers get what you pay for and that business gets the fair price for those products too. This is one of those nice both ways. It works both ways. So finally, I want to tell you that if you go searching online for more information about Commerce, our website is getting upgraded. So next week we'll have a new digital front door. We'll actually have many front doors and a newly designed website that will have a home site and then six subsites that go along. We got feedback from the public or from stakeholders and public to kind of see how they see us, not necessarily how we are organized internally, and our website is now designed that way. So you'll be able to see that soon, and then you'll also be able to check to see if you have unclaimed property. So if you have questions, please contact John. John can help you get to the right person. And so thank you, Chair Stevenson, members. I'm happy to answer any questions. And thank I'm really you. Pleased to have given this overview.
Thank you, Commissioner Arnold. Questions from members? Representative Dowd.
I don't have so much a question as a comment, but thank you for going through that presentation. I claimed two unclaimed articles of my property while I was sitting here. So thank you. Valued at potentially up to $500. So thank you.
That's wonderful. Other questions? Representative Driscoll.
I don't think you have to update your PowerPoints, Madam Commissioner, just because he claimed $500 of unclaimed property, but... not so much a specific question, but what are the things that you see Commerce bringing forward to this committee this year from your agency with all the vast areas that you have? Do you have some priorities you can share with us so we can begin planning accordingly?
Sure. So
Mr. Arnold.
Thank you, Chair Stevenson. I'm not in the practice yet. Thank you, Chair Stevenson and Representative O'Driscoll. So I think, you know, at a core, we'll have our budget, which, you know, the governor's budget isn't yet released. One of the things that I am really excited about is to make sure that we can invest in the areas that that we needed and where we're seeing growth. We've gotten feedback on a couple of our accreditation, which is the national sort of looks at our operations, and they've indicated that we could use some additional folks in a few areas to maintain sort of the national standards. So we routinely get comments for doing a great job for how understaffed we are, and I would like to continue doing a great job with more reasonable staffing. You know, we'll see some additional, we have a couple of model acts that we're looking at in the financial institutions area that are good consumer protections, and we'll have a couple of proposals in the healthcare area to make sure that we have good competition and easy comparability of plans.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Madam Commissioner. As you were going through your presentation, you referenced the renewal of the reinsurance program here in the state of Minnesota, which was a strongly bipartisanly supported event and activity. Do you have any information that you can share, even anecdotally, about how many people have been able to retain insurance as a result of that reinsurance program and the reauthorization?
My hopes of having a reinsurance-free discussion biennium just dashed in meeting number one. Commissioner Arnold.
Chair Stevens and Representative O'Driscoll, thanks for the question. My hopes dashed as well. I don't think we have that. I'll say that there were two policies happening in conjunction. The federal government extended some fairly substantial increases to tax credits that helped those who were previously kind of in that income band that were most impacted by the high premiums. So I think there was that in conjunction with reinsurance. And so I don't know that we would ever be able to sort of tease out which was which, but it certainly helps keep premiums more stable.
Representative O'Driscoll.
I anticipated I might have another question. You haven't lost your edge.
Nope.
Mr. Chair and Madam Commissioner, we also have learned that many banks and financial institutions, both credit unions and chartered banks, have given up their federal charter and have moved to a state charter. Can you just give us a quick overview of where you're at since the last time we met? How many more institutions have come forward and given up that national or federal charter in favor of a state charter?
Commissioner Arnold.
Chair Stevenson, Representative O'Driscoll, great question. We'll have to get back to you on the exact number. We have seen a switch of institutions from federal charter to state charter. I think that's a combination of the laws we have and the staff we have that I think folks find it easier to work with our team, and then the laws are supportive of state chartered banks, which I think is excellent for Minnesota and a really good trend.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions for the commissioner? Seeing none, thank you for your first of, I'm sure, what will be many appearances before this committee, Commissioner Arnold. We look forward to seeing you again soon and appreciate your great work.
Thank you. Thank you all.
And next, we will have our wonderful Attorney General, Keith Ellison. Mr. Attorney General, welcome to the committee. Good to see you again.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good to see you.
And very excited to hear about your office's work on consumer protection, Mr. Attorney General.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And also allow me to thank you, Vice Chair Cotiza Witoon, and also Ranking Member Driscoll. Thank you very much, and all members for having us here today. Appreciate this opportunity to talk about the work of the Attorney General's office. While I've testified in front of you before, this may be the first time in a long time that we've been able to do it in person. That's definitely something that I'm happy about. I look forward to having a communication with all of you, either in this committee setting or one-on-one. Feel free to call our office at any time. I know many of you have already reached out to us and to me personally, and I want to make sure you know that the door is always open as we together look to represent people of the state of Minnesota. Let me start with authority. The Minnesota Constitution establishes the Attorney General's office to serve as the state's chief legal officer. The role and duties of the Attorney General's office arise from the Constitution, state statutes, notably Chapter 8 in particular, and common law and case law. One of the most important of these duties is protecting Minnesota consumers as the chief enforcer of the state's consumer protection laws. The Attorney General's office has broad and comprehensive statutory authority and common law authority to do that job, but I do want to mention a few things to you that I think will improve our ability to protect consumers together. Let me just start again with the basics. First, Minnesota Statute 8.31. Everybody in our office knows 8.31. The legislature has directed the Attorney General to investigate and prosecute, quote, violations of the law of this state respecting unfair, discriminatory, or other unlawful practices in business, commerce, or trade, unquote. I take this responsibility very seriously, and I know all of you do as well, and I want to assure you that each one of our staff members are dedicated to the work to make sure we have a fair economy and one that investors can invest in, consumers can purchase in, workers can work in, business people can open businesses in. Very important for us. The legislature has also passed numerous other consumer protection laws that the Attorney General enforces, and I'd like to highlight a few of them, and after that I'll talk to you about some of the concrete examples of how we've been working. We enforce the Consumer Fraud and Uniform Deceptive Trade Practices Act. These laws broadly prohibit fraud, misrepresentation, deceptive practices, and other unlawful trade practices such as engaging in and conducting and conduct likely to confuse consumers. We enforce the False Statement in Advertising Act, which prohibits untrue, deceptive, or misleading statements in advertisements in any medium. We enforce state laws regulating home and personal solicitation and sales, which require, among other things, conspicuous notice of a 3-day right to cancel a sale and door-to-door salesperson disclosures to prevent deceptive practices. We enforce a variety of laws banning unlawful and unlicensed lending, unlawful debt collection, unlawful debt management, and debt settlement practices. We also enforce several chapters of state law that protect the rights of tenants and mobile home park residents. And we enforce the Antitrust Act, which prohibits unreasonable restraint of trade or commerce and prohibits monopoly power over state trade or commerce. We also have important responsibility in residential utilities area. We represent ratepayers in front of the Public Utilities Commission, it's our job to keep rates as low as possible. And that's our statutory responsibility given to us by you. We also regulate in the area of charities. I've mentioned antitrust already, housing, consumer fraud, and more. Now, you may be wondering how. Well, we investigate suspected violations of these laws through civil investigative demands, which include document requests, depositions, and include other discovery. They also include things like secret shopper, just going into a store and just trying to make a purchase or sale. And when we bring enforcement actions, we can seek injunctive relief, which simply means getting the offending party to stop the illegal behavior. Civil penalties of up to $25,000 per violation, but also restitution, disgorgement, and other equitable remedies, and the costs of investigation and attorney's fees. All of the money goes back to you, to the general fund, except in occasions when you specify special accounts, like in the area of opioids. Now, we work in a broad area. I can describe some of that. So what I'm going to share some cases we've been working on with you now, but it's not comprehensive. It's just a few of the highlights, really. one of the main things, and one of the things we've put a lot of time and energy in, is in unlawful practices in the pharmaceutical industry. We have held manufacturers, distributors, pharmacies, and others responsible in the opioid epidemic, which has cost Minnesotans over 5,500 lives, not to mention people who survived their addiction but who suffered great costs in doing so, and also cost the public uncountable public dollars. We've reached settlements, numerous of them, with dozens and dozens of companies, which involve what will become hundreds of millions of dollars in payments to the state. counties and local governments, as well as injunctive relief and document disclosures. So far, we've ensured that Minnesota will get over $300 million over the next 18 years in a group of settlements that we resolved just last year. But we're also in the process of resolving five more settlements with manufacturers and pharmacies, which will bring an additional $335 million to Minnesota. That's happening now. We may need to be in touch with you about that because there may require some legislative action. While no amount of money could ever make up for the death and destruction these companies have caused, we're committed to holding them accountable and to making sure that there's transparency. One member of your body has said to me in private conversation, which she does not mind me sharing, that look, you know, you can get the money back, but you can't replace my loved one. And I want to make sure that there's transparency. And so with the inspiration of that member of our House of Representatives, we fought to make sure that every single settlement that we've reached has disclosure and transparency. We will not tolerate a non-disclosure agreement simply off the table. And we tell them that from the beginning. Don't even go there. We have made sure that companies disclose millions of internal documents, and we need to know exactly what these companies did to make sure that they don't do it again. In addition to holding opioid companies accountable, along with large coalition of states and territories, we're continuing to sue dozens of generic drug manufacturers and executives for conspiring to illegally fix prices and allocate markets for more than 180 generic drugs. I know many of you think generic drugs, those are the cheaper alternatives. Well, they're a part of the high price of pharmaceutical prices as well. Maybe not as bad as the brands, but they're not off the hook. We're also continuing to litigate our lawsuit against the nation's three largest insulin manufacturers, who allege fraudulent set of artificially high list prices for their products, then negotiate much lower secret actual prices by paying rebates to pharmacy benefit managers. This is an important area of legislation, and I hope you all will continue your hard work on regulating pharmacy benefit managers. And although what I'm about to describe is not litigation, I do want to highlight for you the work of the Task Force on Lowering Pharmaceutical Drug Prices. This is a task force, bipartisan in nature, that we did a few years ago when we convened a number of people from our community, including members of the legislature, 2019-2020. Commend Representative Bierman for being at nearly every single meeting and making important contributions. And we released a report with 14 recommendations for making markets work better for people, using public power to make drugs more affordable and accessible, and requiring more transparency and accountability in pharmaceutical drug markets. One of those recommendations became law when the legislature passed the Alex Smith Emergency Insulin Act of 2020. Which I have been proud to successfully defend in court against Big Pharma's attack on that law. I'm proud to say that the task force report actually won an award called the Notable Document Award from the National Conference of State Legislatures in 2020. When you think about all the reports coming out of state legislatures around the country, this is quite a wonderful distinction to win this award for this report. I recommend one of the things about this report is in the beginning of it, it explains why it's such a complex area to understand. And that when you try to apply normal market conditions on the pharmaceutical industry, it just doesn't work because there's so many different issues that prohibit normal market functioning. We can talk about that more if you like, but I do commend the report to you. I'd be happy to send it to you if you like it, and you can also find it on my website. The next area of our consumer protection I'd like to talk about is protecting the rights of tenants and mobile home park residents. In September 2019, we sued a Minneapolis landlord, fellow by the name of Stephen Meldahl, for a number of things, including numerous misleading and deceptive provisions in his leases with tenants, including misrepresenting to them that they did not have the right to habitable housing and could not have their homes inspected by local authorities without his permission. Those things were not true, yet they were in his lease. In November 2021, after a trial, a Hennepin County judge agreed, and he found that Meldahl's business practices were, quote, brazen and deplorable, unquote, and found that Meldahl had illegally forced his tenants to live in conditions of what he called, and I'm speaking to the judge now, the judge referred to these conditions as, quote, biblical plague proportions, unquote. The court ordered Meldahl to immediately stop deceiving tenants about their leases and awarded over $1 million in fines, fees, and attorney's fees. And I mentioned that to you because this is over 267 families living in the most difficult of conditions, and they got relief, and I'm glad about it. We are currently suing Havenbrook and Pretium Partners, who rent more than 600 single-family homes in the metro area, for severely under-maintaining their homes and leaving many families to live in unlicensed and in uninhabitable conditions. We also allege that they put renters at risk of lead paint poisoning. We've also sued the owner of Broadmoor Valley Mobile Home Park in Marshall, Minnesota, for failing to maintain the roads and common areas to the standard required by Minnesota law, and also using misleading and deceptive provisions in the leases. We also went down to Northfield in the case of Viking Terrace. In Northfield, we protected Mobile Home Park residents without having to sue anybody. When we learned that the new owners of the park had illegally imposed new leases and arbitrary and cruel new provisions on the park residents, we notified the company that they were in violation of the law. And to the company's credit, they came to the table and we negotiated a settlement that was within the law and favorable for all parties concerned, particularly the residents. Much of this tenant protection work is being done by our special outreach and protection unit. This unit investigates and brings enforcement actions to stop or deter deceptive and unlawful practices that target communities that really don't reach, many of them because of historic reasons, because of language reasons, or reasons like that, they tend not to reach out and complain. And so that unit has been very helpful, particularly in certain pockets of our state. Now let me go on to students. After years of litigation with the Minnesota School of Business and Globe University for fraudulently marketing to students that their so-called quote-unquote criminal justice program, which costs between $40,000 and $80,000, could land students a job in the field, when this company knew it could not because they were not licensed to issue these degrees. After that, and winning at the Minnesota Supreme Court, my office secured $40 million in debt forgiveness and restitution for nearly 4,000 Minnesotans. But students were applying in the criminal justice system because they wanted to go into law enforcement, but the school was not authorized to issue that degree, and yet they charged these students, they made these students pay, and that was unfair, and we put a stop to it. We also settled an investigation into unfair student loan servicing practices by Navient, which resulted in $14 million in loan cancellations and restitution payments to 4,000 Minnesota students. We also, due to a multi-state investigation into fraudulent and deceptive practices by the now defunct ITT Tech and several years of advocacy that the Minnesota Attorney General's Office has led, the U.S. Department of Education canceled $26 million in student loan debt for 1,400 Minnesota students who attended ITT Tech. And this and other work to protect students' rights has put more than $800 million back into the pockets of Minnesota consumers in debt restitution and relief. Let me also talk about false advertising and unlawful door-to-door sales. We're continuing to litigate against the vaping manufacturer, Juul, and its partner, Altria Group. Our lawsuit is not involving what they do regarding adults. Adults want to smoke. That's their business, but their marketing to children is what's the guts of our lawsuit, and we allege that they violated Minnesota's consumer protection laws and created a public nuisance by deceptively marketing highly addictive e-cigarette vape products to kids, replicating the same playbook Big Tobacco used years ago, and the case is set for trial in March, so stay tuned. We've also sued four Utah-based solar panel companies known as Brio and three of their executives for engaging in fraudulent deceptive marketing and sales practices when selling residential solar panel systems to Minnesotans. These included salespersons misrepresenting their affiliation with local utilities, acting like they were from the utility when they weren't, how much money consumers could save, often deceptive almost every case, and tricking consumers into signing binding sales contracts and loan agreements without informing them of their right to cancel. And we have reached settlements with almost all of the companies. They are banned from conducting any further business in Minnesota and are paying more than $200,000 in restitution. And I'm proud to tell you that the Solar Industry Trade Association gave the Minnesota Attorney General's Office an award because, well, we were suing these companies. They said, look, we have an honest industry. We have a good industry. We have an industry that Minnesotans need. And we can't have the trust that consumers are putting in our industry damaged by these sort of unfair actors. So we're pleased to receive that award and honored to be able to put it in our office. Another important area of consumer protection work is protecting consumers from anti-competitive conduct. We join 9 other states in the Federal Trade Commission in bringing an enforcement action against a pesticide manufacturer, Syngenta and Corvetta. Specifically, we allege these manufacturers established a, quote, loyalty program for certain active ingredients in their branded pesticide products that illegally suppress competition from generic manufacturers. We are seeking injunctive relief and disgorgement of the company's ill-gotten profits, which we plan to distribute to harmed Minnesota farmers. Minnesota has also joined a large coalition of attorneys general across the country, filing 2 separate antitrust actions against Google. The first deals with Google's monopoly in general search, and the second deals with anti-competitive product on Google Play App Store and in-app purchases. And we've also sued Facebook for acquiring and maintaining monopoly in social networking. And let me just tell you, I'm also real proud of the work we do for workers. When I first ran for Attorney General, I promised to make a priority of fighting wage theft. In my first year of office, we established a new wage theft unit, and the legislature passed upgraded best in the nation wage theft, anti-wage theft legislation. Thank you for that. We've used our authority that you've given us to protect people's wages. I'd like to just tell you about 2 things that have happened, but many, many more have. I'll tell you this generally. We get many more cases than we have staff to actually do, and that's sort of unfortunate, but we're doing the best we can. We've sued gig economy companies Shipt for misclassifying its delivery workers as independent contractors. We claim Shipt fails to lawfully classify workers as employees in order to avoid the cost of providing them with the employment protections guaranteed under Minnesota law, and we're seeking a court order requiring Shipt to classify its workers as employees and to recover back in overtime wages. And we've also sued a company because its owner was obstructing an ongoing wage and hour investigation into the company by the Department of Labor and Industry. We allege that PMC not only failed to keep all of its records required by law and refused to give those records over to DLI, but that they have actively dissuaded workers from cooperating with the investigation and used threats and intimidation to stifle cooperation at multiple work sites, including the Vikings Lakes project in Eagan. And last, but in no way least, the area of work that I'd like to highlight is has to do with the with consumer complaints. Now, we do a lot of mediation. You hear a lot about lawsuits that we file, but we do a lot of work that never makes it to court because we'd rather resolve the matter early. And I want to commend a lot of the companies who we bring complaints to from consumers, because sometimes there's mistakes, sometimes there's misunderstandings, and oftentimes we can mediate these things. And I think this is important. The Consumer Action Division, which does this work, they're not lawyers, but they are well-trained advocates, they're there to answer calls and emails from the public and mediate consumer complaints when they receive them. In 2022, the division answered more than 52,000 calls from the public, mediated more than 14,000 consumer complaints, and arrived at settlements of over more than $10 million for Minnesota consumers. And over the last 4 years, they've been able to settle cases in the amount of $26 million. Doesn't go to the state of Minnesota coffers, but it goes into the pockets of Minnesotans, which is really important. Let me just wrap up by saying that, that we do have some things that we would urge you to consider. One is continuing your work to make pharmaceutical drugs affordable. This is a major source of complaint from consumers. We hear about this everywhere, whether it's insulin or other drugs. We hope that the work that you all have done, that you will continue to do, because we know that good legislation will reduce the number of complaints that we get, and it will make Minnesotans in a position, it will put them in a position to afford their lives much better. We're working on reining in monopolistic and antitrust behavior. Chair Stevenson, I want to say thank you to you. Last session, you devoted a full committee hearing to antitrust issues. We were able to testify. We thought that was extremely important. If you compare the economy of the United States over the last 30 years, the one thing that you will see is that concentration of markets has just taken over in nearly every area. 30, 40 years ago, you had numerous producers in nearly every industry. Now, most industries you look at have boiled down to three or four. And it doesn't matter whether you're talking about hotels or cold cereal or beer or meat or pork or poultry, we have a highly concentrated economy. This is bad for consumers, it's bad for competition, it's bad for startups, it's bad for product diversity. And it's certainly bad for consumer prices. We pay a lot more for internet in the United States than they do in Europe. And so I just think this is something that we should continue to focus our energy on. My office will certainly do that. And also, we're hoping, and we hope that you will continue to focus on the right to repair. This is a concern that crosses party lines and affects people of every kind in the state. Some progress has been made on this issue, and I very much hope we can make more. Minnesota farmers who I talk to all the time are telling me that it's getting tougher every day to make a living, and guaranteeing the right to repair, and that they won't bust a warranty and put themselves in economic jeopardy because they tried to fix their own tractor. This is something that's very important to them. And I know you will continue to consider this very important priority issue. Price gouging. You may know Minnesota is one of 13 states that lack any legal protection of any kind against price gouging. We were able to do it during the pandemic because of the governor's executive order. Outside of that, we don't have a statute, and about 37 other states do have one. I think we should seriously look at that, and I urge action in that area. And Minnesota is only one of six states whose consumer protection statutes do not include any prohibition against unfair or unconscionable practices. As a result, Minnesotan practices like consumer harassment, high-pressure sale tactics, one-sided contract terms that are unfair to consumers are far harder for my office to enforce under current law. They can say, well, we told you this was a completely unfair contract, and you signed it because you didn't have any choice. But in other states, we would be able to say that contracts violates public policy. In Minnesota, we're basically limited to deception. And if they say we disclosed, then that makes it a much tougher situation. A law on the books specifically prohibiting unfair and unconscionable practices would bring Minnesota in line with most other states and would help Minnesotans afford their lives. And finally, while it's really sort of slightly out of my ballpark, it is an important consumer issue. I hope that you all can make progress on the area of family medical leave. And I strongly hope it will pass a session. It is one of the things we hear about all the time. We had a task force on women's economic security. We know the legislature passed a series of laws in 2013. We wanted to see how we were doing as a state. And I'm telling you that this is one area we hear so much about in our series of conversations. There are many excellent recommendations of the Women's Economic Task Force, like eliminating the pink tax, which is that women pay more for regular products than men pay. And that report is also on our website as well. And finally, stable housing. We are going to continue to work to help Minnesotans have a safe, stable place to live, and that includes manufactured housing. Mobile home parks are a naturally occurring source of affordable housing as long as it's well maintained and well regulated, and this is something that I hope we can talk about and something you'll think about regulating. So let me just say, as I conclude, and I really am on my last page, at the end of the day, the role of the Attorney General is to help people afford their lives and live with dignity, safety, respect. Protecting consumers is a fundamental way to do that, and is a key aspect of the work that we do every day. Imagine being a victim of a fraud. You know it's a fraud. And imagine being a victim of a monopoly, or being forced to deal with only one company that doesn't care about you. Imagine being stuck on the phone tree for hours with an insurance company or cable company or some other kind of company that just never seems to pick up the phone to help you. Imagine feeling that the economy is stacked against you. We can all imagine it because it's happened to Minnesotans every single day. Well, Minnesota consumers do have an option. That is the Minnesota Attorney General's office. We urge people to call us, but we know not everybody's going to have that number, so we'll go out to them, but we look forward to working with you to passing the best consumer legislation that we can so that Minnesotans can all have a shot at meaningful prosperity. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, Mr. Attorney General, and thanks for the to-do list. That was helpful. It squares up with a lot of what's on my personal to-do list and a lot of things that we've heard in this committee in past years, and hopefully we can get beyond hearing into law this year. So appreciate that. Questions for the Attorney General? Representative Brindley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Attorney General Ellison. You talked a lot about fraud protection and a lot of what you've done with businesses. I'm wondering if you can tell us a little bit about your jurisdiction when it comes to fraud and nonprofits.
Right.
Thank you.
Mr. Attorney General.
Mr. Chairman, so here's the thing. When it comes to nonprofits, we do regulate nonprofits. They have to file documentation with us when they establish themselves. They have certain annual reporting requirements. But just because a nonprofit doesn't file doesn't mean they're engaged in fraud. A lot of the fraud that we get wind of comes to us because people complain, because we don't have a process to go out and just say, how are you doing, to each nonprofit. So, yeah, we have authority in that area, and that's the answer.
And before I give you a follow-up, just real quick, your question was exactly in the jurisdiction of this committee, so this is not targeted at you, but when you said jurisdiction, it made me remind that I wanted to say, before we did the questions, that I'd ask members to keep their questions to the Attorney General's consumer protection and areas, as your question definitely was, and not into the many diverse other things that the Attorney General does. So, Representative New Brindley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions for the Attorney General? Representative Bierman.
First off, thank you, Mr. Attorney General, for that pharmaceutical task force that you held, and just thank you also for recommending that report goes out to new and current members, because there is so much work there left to do. That was good work that was done in that committee, and it's ongoing, so thank you for bringing that up. I also want to thank you for your work on getting those opioid settlements, with the damage that has been caused across our state in every single county. That money that you've gotten for that has been extremely helpful, and Representative Cagle has been working on ORAC, and I know in my community that's been well received and needed, despite the fact that the opioid epidemic is moving ahead in leaps and bounds from other causes than prescribed opioids. We have a lot of work to do there, but thank you for that. I just wanted to ask, based on the Commerce Department was here earlier, and upon their conclusion, they recommended a few, you know, they had a wish list and some asks, and I just want to know what your ask is for the office at this time.
And before I give it to you, we don't have any budgetary authority for the Attorney General in this committee. The chair to your right is the one who would do that. And the Attorney General did kind of give us a little bit of a to-do list, but if you have anything else to add to that, Mr. Attorney General, happy to give you the opportunity to add.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Representative, we'll be more than happy to share the budgetary information with everybody. We know everybody's going to be voting on it. It will appear in front of Representative Cleron's committee. I just want to say thank you for talking about the opioid crisis. I mean, you can tick off a lot of numbers, but you can't really feel the damage of it until you've looked in the eyes of a loved one who has lost somebody or almost lost somebody. And so it's not just money. It's actually a chance for a better life for people. And let me also say, it's not nearly enough. It's not enough. But it's a start. So thank you for asking about that.
Any additional questions? Seeing none, Attorney General, thank you again. It's always a pleasure, and I'm sure we'll see you again this year.
My pleasure, Mr. Chair, and all members, thank you very much. Please, I know you do constituent services. Consider us an ally of yours as you go about that work. Thank you very much.
Members, that concludes our agenda. I know I knew that was coming. so we'll maybe some other housekeeping items. Representative O'Driscoll, if you have a question or two.
Mr. Chair, I am curious, I'm sure, as the public and the other members on this committee, what's in store for us over the next couple of weeks? Do we have an agenda and some topics that we should be preparing for?
Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll, for the question. In addition to some of the topics that were discussed today and the functioning of the Commerce Department, which, of course, will be doing the budgetary work, it's up to the members to decide what bills are introduced. We're waiting for introductions. We had some today. I think we'll have a really robust discussion, as we always do, on a number of different topics, starting as soon as Monday. Representative O'Driscoll.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Could you define a little bit more what next week looks like? That you kind of got that process started here for us this afternoon.
I'm Representative Driscoll, very happy to discuss next week. We will have a hearing posted shortly for Monday. We will be hearing, I believe it's House File 6. Is that the right number? It's the Attorney General actually just referenced it. The price gouging bill was in today's introductions. I may have gotten the number wrong, but we'll have that posted shortly after the hearing today, I'm sure. That will be on Monday. On Monday, we will also have an overview hearing from the insurance, banking, just insurance, just the insurance industry on Monday. On Wednesday, we are still working on our agenda, but I expect we will be hearing a bill, and stay tuned. Representative Driscoll.
Now you piqued my interest.
I think stay tuned. This committee will pique your interest week in and week out.
As it has over the last few years I've been with you as chair. Well, I could probably narrow it down to one of 55 bills right now that's on the introduction today, but I suspect that we'll be seeing some things coming tomorrow in our special session, or I should say in our additional floor session, and that will also mean that there's probably going to be some bills that you may be advocating for our agenda at that point. How many more overviews do you anticipate we're going to be having in this committee?
Representative Driscoll, I think we have a couple planned. We're doing telecom on Monday as well. We're doing telecom on Monday also, in addition to insurance. So it'll be the price gouging bill, insurance, and telecom overviews. We're working on a couple other overviews consistent with what we've done in past years in terms of the subject area, and we will probably intersperse them with bills over the coming weeks as time allows. Representative Driscoll.
That's all for now, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Wonderful. Well, then the last housekeeping announcement that I have is before adjourning, I wanted to remind you that any documents that you don't put in the save folder in your packet will be discarded. So if there's anything you want to keep, make sure to put in your save folder. Otherwise, they will be discarded. With that, the committee's agenda for today is concluded, and the meeting is adjourned.